Hello, this is Brian Wampler with another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast, the podcast about guitars, amps, and effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions. Joining me today again is Blake Weiland from the amazing podcast called Tone Mob, and also from the Chasing Tone for the past 250 episodes or something like that. So, Blake, how you doing?
Yeah, I feel like I'm just as much from this as I am my own, since I haven't quite crested the 200 episode mark on Tone Mob yet. So which one am I really part of from?
That's a good question. A little of both, I suppose. Ambidextrous in the podcasting world, I suppose.
I'm just dumb enough that I've considered starting another one, too. I was thinking the other day about starting one where I just talk to people that I want to talk to. Like, doesn't matter what they doesn't matter if they're a guitar player or not. I just talk to people I find interesting, because there's believe it or not, there's other things that I'm into other than guitar stuff. I know that's shocking.
I can understand that completely. Who would you be targeting? Because you said people that I like, and I'm thinking, Mom, get on this podcast with me real quick.
Well, I was actually considering. I've thought about this a lot over the years, and like, what would I be doing actually? Because like you said, it'd be really easy for it just to be like, hey, Mom and Dad, let's talk to you. Like, you know, that'd be really easy. Right. I think the angle is, for me, what I've been thinking about lately is talking to people who are doing things out of the norm, you know, not doing the 9-to-5, you know, so they could be entrepreneurs. They could be, you know, like YouTubers, they could be podcasters, mm-hmm. they could be hermits who live in the woods. You know what I mean? Like off the grid type of people, tiny house people, you know, anything that's just like not what most people consider normal, like just a different way to live your life. That's kind of the angle that I've been thinking might actually encompass a lot of things and make some sense. Just people who are doing things a little bit differently. I find that very interesting.
It is interesting, you know. I mean, it's there's several different websites, different podcasts that I listen to that kind of have some of that going on with it. Like they'll have some episodes that kind of deep dive into, you know, someone that was completely off grid and they grow all their own food and stuff like that, right? And I find that as well, just like you did, incredibly interesting, just because that's not how I live my life. And it's interesting to see how they live their life from their eyes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But the thing that, cause I too would like to do something along those lines, but I'm not so sure about an interview type of podcast. Just simply as you know, now it becomes a lot of work trying to find someone every week new to talk about. Like it becomes basically another job you're adding, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
But who knows? I mean, there's probably a lot more draw to something like that, especially in times like this where, you know, a lot of people are working from home and thinking, why am I doing this again? Why did I choose this as my my career?
I've talked to a handful of people that have, well, just talking to somebody yesterday, he is a manager for a band, and he said the company he works for, they're like, we're not going back to the office ever. Like, this is what we're doing now. So I think there's a lot of companies that are probably going to make that calculation. There are benefits to being in an office, you know. There are definitely things that are good about it, but there are also a lot of headaches and expenses associated with it. So I understand if somebody, you know, company decides that's not worth it. I mean, you've worked essentially remotely for years, and so have I.
I have. And in fact, I was actually talking to Dave Hunter of, if you have ever read any books or magazines, you probably know who Dave Hunter is. He's a well-known editor. More like a writer, I suppose. But anyway, so I was talking to Dave. He was doing like this little interview thing with me. And we were talking about how the company has changed since working with boutique amps. And I was telling him, like, it's been fantastic. Like, I used to have, a big office and, you know, staff and like all these things that I had to manage. And then whenever I could possibly fit it in, I would go out to my, you know, my little barn and try to build a circuit or something, you know, try to breadboard something or maybe shoot a video. And now that's like, I don't have really any staff or no employees. I would say I have people I work with, but, you know, there's no employees that I have to make sure they clock in on time or anything like that. And for the most part, my days are pretty laid back. Like I can kind of do what I want. So if it's a pretty night, I mean, obviously I could anyways, but even more so now because I just focus on the things I like doing, which means some, you know, like today I'm working on a video and, yesterday I was supposed to, and I just wasn't feeling it. So I didn't, I just didn't feel like it yesterday. Like I gotta be on go mode. And, I was not in go mode yesterday. I was just more in a, kind of here, you know. You ever have one of those days you're just kind of there? Like, I'm not in a bad mood, not in a good mood. I'm just here.
I mean,
doesn't make for a good video whenever you're in that
kind of mood. I feel that. Yesterday I was definitely in that mode too. Well, I was in a good mood. Yesterday was my birthday, so I was in a good mood.
Oh, but it was. Happy birthday. I totally forgot to mention that.
No worries. No, it was a good mood day, but I was also like, you know, most holidays and birthdays and stuff, I'm still working like on something in some capacity. And yesterday I was really like, I'm doing the bare minimum today. So I put out a podcast episode because it was Monday and made a couple posts and I was like, I'm coasting today. I'm digitally unplugging because I still wasn't fully unplugged, but we've fantasized before about I'm going to at some point. I'm going to have to plan for it. But at some point, I'm going off the grid for a week or so. Like, not just the digital grid, but I'm going into the woods and just nodding. I'm just not going to do anything productive, quote unquote productive.
Well, you have the Pacific Coast Trail out there?
Pacific Crest Trail. Yeah.
Is that what it is? Yeah. So there you go. Take a few months off. Just walk the trail, you know?
I've fantasized about that before. I'm not going to lie. I have thought about it. I got an access point not too far away.
Well, there you go, man. There you go. Just, you got to time it right, though, because you do not want to be walking through the northern states during the winter, as you know.
Not really. Not really. These last few winters haven't been too bad, but still, yeah, it's not a thing you want to do. Not really.
You can avoid it. Right. Like I would probably try to time it where, when it was cooler, I was in the southernmost states. And when it was warmer, I was in the northernmost states. But that's just me.
Yeah, maybe someday. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to take that kind of time off, but we'll see. I'm just hoping for a week at this point.
Yeah, which kind of gets us back to, you know, you're talking about starting another podcast. There is, I'm trying to remember the name of that channel. I can't remember it, but it's basically this lady who, I guess she's walked the Appalachian Trail several times. We talked about the Appalachian Trail a few episodes ago. Mm-hmm. And so she always has like tips, like what kind of tents to use and like just all kinds of tips that you would give someone that was going to walk the Appalachian Trail. And I've heard some interviews with her that she's done that's just really fascinating on kind of how her life's structured, because she's walked, you know, multiple trails all around the world apparently, and that's just what she does. And she, you know, makes videos about it and has sponsors for her videos, of course, and that's her life. That's pretty cool. Like that's an amazing way to make a living, you know. Like that's yet another example of someone who just said, you know what, I'm kind of checking out of the way this world works and living it on my own terms. And I think I'm going to walk around on some trails I want to walk on and maybe take some video and, you know, we'll see what happens. And it worked out.
Yeah, that's exactly the kind of person I want to talk to. That is exactly it, 100%. That would be fun.
So, anyways, yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but that just reminded me of that.
It sounds like a fascinating individual. But we did have a little something we wanted to talk about regarding, well, yeah. Some of you might be using the service right now to listen to this podcast, Spotify.
Right. So apparently, the CEO, Daniel Ek, right? Is it Ek? I'm assuming it's Ek.
I think it's Ek. I don't know. I've only read it. I've not heard it spoken.
Let's see. There's a couple different headlines here. He says, you can't record. Well, he's talking to musicians. You can't record every 3 to 4 years and think that's going to be enough. That was on guitarworld.com. And then another website called The Fader basically said the same thing. The headline, Spotify CEO says, working musicians may no longer be able to release music only once every 3 to 4 years. And I'll read through this real quick to give the listeners some context. So Spotify CEO Daniel Ek discussed streaming and sustainability in a recent interview with Music Ally, published on Thursday of July 2020. Ek denied criticisms that Spotify pays insufficient royalties to artists and insisted that the role of the musician had changed in today's future landscape. By the way, I'm reading from thefader.com in case you're wondering. Ek claimed that a narrative fallacy had been created and caused music fans to believe that Spotify doesn't pay musicians enough for streams of their music. Some artists that used to do well in the past may not do well in this future landscape, he said. Where you can't record music only every 3 to 4 years and think that's going to be enough. What is required from successful musicians, he insisted, is a deeper, more consistent, and prolonged commitment than in the past. The artists today that are making it realize that it's about creating a continuous engagement with their fans. It is about putting the work in, about the storytelling around the album, and about keeping a continuous dialogue with your fans. Let's throw in some stuff about the stock because that doesn't have much to do with it. Spotify stock value hit an all-time high this summer as questions about the streaming platform's compensation of artists remain unresolved. Royalties on Spotify and Apple Music are determined as a pro rata basis. What does that mean? Any idea? I have no idea without looking it up.
It's like, it's prorated basically. It's without getting too complicated. It's just like, anyway. It doesn't matter. They get paid a certain amount per stream, and some people don't think it's enough. that's gotcha. Probably good enough for the okay, purposes gotcha. Of this discussion.
Gotcha. Payment on each particular song is based on how much the song is streamed in comparison with the platform's most popular tracks. This results in the tiniest of payouts for most independent musicians, as Liz Pelly wrote in The Baffler, I guess that's a magazine, in 2017. However, Ek, the CEO of Spotify, alleged that artists have said many times, quotations, in private, that they are happy with their royalties from Spotify, and said that he believes that musicians who cannot make a living may not be in step with modern standards. He says, I feel really that the ones that aren't doing well in streaming are predominantly people who want to release music the way it used to be released. Whew, this kind of goes along with what we've been talking about all along, and I think several episodes we were even talking about Periphery just doing a killer job on doing on working within this environment.
Right. So like, I want to start off by saying like, I don't usually get into these conversations on the internet that are kind of controversial, but I felt fairly strongly about this one. And I want to preface it by saying, I do agree with the majority of musicians saying that streaming platforms in general need to pay more. Like Bandcamp does, and Bandcamp's tiny, you know, compared to Spotify. They're much more friendly to musicians and a much better place to support your favorite artists digitally if they have it available there. So first of all, that's a thing. Like if you really care about supporting your favorite artists, try to figure out the ways to maximize, you know, your dollar. I'm not saying you got to spend more money on them. Just saying, try to figure out the ways that when you do spend money that go more directly to them. Bandcamp is definitely one of those things. But I'm not entirely disagreeing with Daniel either. You know, you and I have talked about this so much, and you're right. I think he's right. You can't release an album every 3-4 years and that's all you do and then tour around it like the old way things used to be done. I don't think that that's feasible anymore. And I don't think that that would be feasible even if streaming wasn't a thing. I think if you were still relying on record sales to generate, you know, your revenue, I still think you would have to do more. And a lot of people interpreted that do more to mean release more albums so Spotify can make more money. While maybe he did mean that, that's not how I interpreted it. You know, the way I viewed it was, you know, when one of my favorite artists, Dustin Kensrue from Thrice, you know, he recently started a podcast. And I was super stoked about it because he's one of my favorite artists. His podcast doesn't really have anything to do with music, but it's another point of connection that I can have with him now. And he started a Patreon and he has, you know, a decent revenue stream coming from that now. You know, some people could start a YouTube channel. Some people could do more stuff on Instagram. We have all these different platforms and ways that artists can connect with their fans. I think that's what he meant by you need to do more. You know, I think the cues should be taken from YouTubers and content creators that aren't a traditional quote unquote touring musician. You know, Matt Heafy from Trivium, it was the one that I pointed to in the discussions I was having. The man works super hard online. He's extremely disciplined. He posts a lot of content and he has a very regular Twitch streaming schedule that actually makes him more money than the band does when they're not touring. So, you know, there's all these different ways to go about deepening your connection with your fans. And I really think that's what Daniel was more talking about. Like, that's what he's saying when people are saying that they are making it work. That is how they're making it work. I don't know if I'm making a lot of sense or if I'm just rambling.
No, but. No. I mean, I was actually reading through your post as you were talking, cause you were hitting bits and pieces of it. So it's just kind of fascinating. And I mean, for the most part, but what you're basically saying is that he is not saying put out as much crap music as you possibly can and hope for the best.
No, saying, I don't think so.
He's saying it's a new world. We have to be a little more strategical about some of this stuff and not just do things the way things used to be, because that's not the world we live in anymore. The world is not, the music world doesn't really have gatekeepers like it once did. Now it does still, but they just really aren't as important as what they used to be. I mean, generally in the past, if you wanted to make money playing music, you had to basically get signed and get a very high interest loan from the record label. And then hopefully they would pay you just a little bit of money. And hopefully you would be able to pay them back. And then you could actually get real money. Now, during that time, though, they would give you chunks of cash. But it was understood that it was basically a loan. It was basically like a personal loan. You here's some cash, but you're going to pay us back. And it's going to have a lot of interest.
It was a loan with really awful terms. Like
it was like terms.
You'd hear people like, I got $1 million advance or whatever they got. An advance, there's a reason they call it an advance. It's not a paycheck. It's not royalties.
It's not free money.
No, that is money that they gave you to make your album and live on while you were making the album. And then every single penny that gets generated from your record sales goes to pay that advance back until it's paid off with the interest terms that they set. So, right. You know, $1 million advance sounds great, except that it's basically now you owe us $1 million and, or, you know, $1.2 million or $1.3 or whatever it is, you know, right, that they set.
Which is one reason why you see there's a lot of artists that would simply declare bankruptcy. They would be broke after their record deal. There's a lot of successful ones, though, that would kind of weather the storm there for a few albums. And then they'd renegotiate their entire contract or change labels with a new contract. And they'd have a little bit more clout. They'd have some legs to stand on, because now they can say, well, look, you know, we sold 3 million albums or whatever. I'm not taking these terms. So there was room for negotiation now. I'm not saying that a record label means that you're broke by any means, but I am saying that that way of looking at music is long gone. And you know, in a time like this, being able to simply have a Patreon that, you know, this goes back to the 1,000 true fans thing. You need 1,000 true fans that will pay you $300 a year. You're going to be okay. You know, and that may mean that you're signing guitar pedals or something for them, or, you know, when they donate to your Patreon or pay your Patreon, maybe you send a lot of people out free shirts or something. Not, well, I guess it wouldn't be free at that point, but it would be some sort of merchandise that they get in return for pledging a set amount of money to you every month. I understand how there could be a lot of people upset about this, but it just seems like it is what it is. You're not going to stop Spotify. No, I mean, as much as you want to ban Spotify, it's not going to happen because the biggest bulk of people are not us guitar players and aren't musicians, and they just are people that want to listen to music. So Spotify is not going anywhere. It's really not. Like you said, it would be nice if they would follow more of like a Bandcamp type model. But at this point, it's kind of like the Apple Store. They don't have to now. They have a gigantic amount of users. Why should they pay more for something and get the exact same thing? It's, as a business, it doesn't work, and there's no reason for them to really change. Like, there's nothing that bad that's going to happen by a small percentage of people saying, well, I'm not listening to Spotify anymore. I know that's a very unpopular opinion, but if you take the emotion out of it, it's just a business.
Yeah, 100%. They don't have any motivation to change. I wish they would. I wish they would, but there's a reason why I don't really use Spotify. I listen to podcasts on it sometimes, but for music, I try to stream, and the artists that I really like, you know, I buy their merchandise. I buy their records on vinyl because I'm a vinyl nerd. Like, you know, I try to, you know, with the artists I really like, I kind of view it as double dipping because I don't necessarily listen to vinyl all the time. I always have my phone with me, though. So it's like, oh, yeah, I bought this record on vinyl and I'm going to stream it while I'm in the car, you know, type of thing. So there are ways to help the artists that you like. I agree that with the vast majority of musicians that I wish the streaming services paid more. And I think they can afford to based on $100+ million checks for Joe Rogan. I think they can probably afford to. I don't think they will, though. I think what you're saying is correct. They don't have any reason to. Now, if we all banded together and did some sort of Spotify boycott, maybe they would have reason to up their rates a little bit. But I don't know that that's going to happen. So in the meantime, what he's saying is definitely not wrong. Like, you got to figure it out. I think that more recording artists basically need to look at how YouTubers and podcasters have been doing things for years and adopt some of those models. That's my opinion. I know I'm biased because I'm a podcaster, but that's just what I think.
But that's just kind of how the crafts of any sort, whether you're teaching people how to put glitter on cups, or whether you're teaching people how to build guitar pedals. That's kind of how things work. I mean, you can make an information course to teach that. You can make YouTube videos. You can do Facebook videos, like all these different ways that you can try to make a little bit of money from. And maybe they all sum together to bring income to you. But at the same time, as we've talked about 1,000 times, you're building a brand, you know, and as much as I hate to say it, it just seems like the current state of the world is that music is kind of part of your content production and not necessarily your end product now. And I know that all of a sudden, like, there's a bunch of people that just got very angry and fell out of their chairs and spit their coffee out, probably at their phone yelling at me. But I don't, like, I'm not making the rules. I'm just observing what's happening. And what's happening is an Instagram and YouTube culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as such, I mean, the way to do that is to, like, just like you said, how are people putting a free podcast out and making a living doing that? I mean, think about that for a second. This pod, you're not paying anything for this podcast. You're not paying anything for any podcast. But yet, for some reason, thousands of people every week are taking their time, research, unless you're on this show, researching what they're doing, doing some research, writing out some form of outline or script, and they're putting that out and then marketing that. But you also don't see behind the scenes, well, they're also selling shirts, or they probably have a coupon code for something or other, hoping that you'll click through it and they'll get a little bit of money. And there's other ways to monetize that as well, but that's just an example. I mean, there are different ways to monetize your craft besides just selling the it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing this even more as Wampler kind of dives into plugins. Yes, you can make some money from selling the plugins, but there's a lot of other things you can do with that plugin as well. And there's a lot of other ways to monetize that plugin besides just selling it to a person.
We'll be right back.
Is real music dying? What even is real music, and who are we to judge that? Well, my father is a lifelong musician, and together we've been making music for over a decade. In our new podcast, we dare to ask the urgent, the weird, and the deep questions, and we have a lot of wild stories to tell. No matter what genres you enjoy, whether you're a musician, a producer, or a listener, we invite you to discover unconventional perspectives on music. So tune in, and go follow Mad Makings of Music wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's the good point. The good point. There's lots of good points. No, you make sense. We're on the same wavelength. I don't know if everybody is, but I think that's what more musicians need to look at. They just need to go, okay, how do YouTubers make a living? You know, like, how do insert content creator here? How do they make a living from doing what they do? Because nobody's paying for YouTube videos. Hardly anybody is paying for YouTube videos. Nobody's paying for podcasts, very rarely, unless you get into premium content stuff. You know, we've done this show for how long now?
5 years.
Yeah. And it's like, well, I really like talking to you, but if it didn't make some sort of, financial sense at some point, we would probably stop doing this thing.
Right.
But it indirectly helps us with our endeavors that we're trying to do. And so we would have stopped years ago if this was just a giant time suck. But we've tried to figure it out. And I think that that's what more and more musicians are coming to realize. I think that Daniel may be selfishly looking out for his company's interests, but he's not necessarily incorrect in everything that he says. That's, I guess, the big point of this whole thing.
Right. And I mean, I suppose if every artist maybe became part of some sort of union or something, and they all said, you know what, we're all pulling our music from Spotify, all of us, everyone that makes music, that may have an effect, but I just don't see it happening. I just don't see it happening because that's where consumers are going. That's where they want to hear the music. And if it's not Spotify, it'll be something different. I mean, kind of look back at what Napster did. Of course, it wasn't legal, but there was a hole in the market and it filled that hole. And then that got shut down and something else took its place. And then that got shut down and something else took its place. Like, it's just going to happen this way. And at some point, there's not really anything you can do to fight it. I know that sounds terrible, but if you figure out a way to take advantage of those little gray areas, and I don't mean take advantage in an illegal way or an immoral way, but if you take advantage, like we were talking about, by getting those 1,000 true fans and by getting that dedicated audience that wants to hear what you have to say every time you say it, then I think that's going to go a lot further than just sticking another 8 songs out on your Spotify account every other year.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find it. I'm not going to be able to pull the exact quote because I saw it quite a while ago. But BJ Barham, he's an artist. Most people probably know his group American Aquarium as instead of his name. But I remember him saying something on Instagram a while back. I'm struggling to find it, but I'll try to summarize. And it was something about like their album hitting some sort of chart on Spotify. And somebody was like, well, you know, aren't you mad that you don't make very much money from Spotify? And his quote basically said, and I hate to do this without having it in front of me, but I can't find it right here in this moment. Basically, it said, yeah, it's a bummer that we, you know, that streaming rates are what it is. He's like, but it's a nice recurring source of revenue that happens, you know, every month. And he said, and honestly, if that's how people discover us is through this free platform and they become a fan of the band, I'd much rather them not make very much money off of it there and come see us at a show when we come through town. And I was like, you know, that's kind of how I view it. Like I've definitely discovered people through people sending me links to Spotify and Apple Music. Like, oh, have you heard this band? Oh, no. And maybe I would have forgotten or not checked them out immediately when somebody sends me that, you know, like if there wasn't a link to something to listen to. If somebody's like, oh, you should check out American Aquarium, I might not remember by the next time I get to Google searching for new bands, but I can just hit that link and boom, I'm listening to it right then and there. I've definitely became fans of artists that way. So, you know, is it all bad? I don't think so. Is there some things that could use fixed? Yeah. Are there ways to, like you said, exploit it in a good way? Yeah, there are. There definitely are.
Right. And so I would want to wrap this up by just clarifying, I am not agreeing that the amount of money artists are getting paid, like that you should be happy with it, that you should say, oh, well, that's fine. I'm obviously in the wrong for wanting more money. That's not what I'm saying at all.
You're right. 100% right.
And in fact, if I was Bandcamp, the thing I would be doing, since I am paying artists better, I would be looking at, well, how do I beat Spotify? How do I continue paying artists a lot more money, but grow bigger and get accepted among the masses more than what Spotify is? I mean, that's another way to fix the problem is have another service that fills that void yet pays artists enough. But at the same time, it's not just about the artists. You have to be able to get the people that are willing to pay the service money to listen to music, the customers. You have to get those customers on board. That's expensive. It's expensive to acquire new customers. So not that it can't be done. The opportunity's there. We'll see what happens.
In the meantime, everyone who's listening to this and is upset about Spotify, go track your favorite artist down on Bandcamp.
There you go. Like,
they may not be there. Ask them to put their music there. You know, the artists and the managers and stuff, they do, you know, they may not see every comment, but they do look at stuff. They do see things even if they don't respond. And if you start knocking on your favorite band's door, like, hey, put your music on Bandcamp. Hey, put your music on Bandcamp. You know, they'll probably figure out a way to do it. So
right.
Check out Bandcamp in the meantime, because it's a nice platform for artists for sure.
Right. Yep. And if you are a big fan of an artist, then just simply make sure that you take a little more effort and maybe buy their vinyl, maybe buy a CD. I don't have a CD player. Isn't that crazy? I don't have a CD player to buy a CD, but buy a shirt, buy the new Brad Paisley pedal, because it's awesome. You know, I mean, buy something that they're putting out to show your support, not just stream and call it a day.
Yeah, that is definitely, there is a certain amount of, because we know all this, and I have to imagine that people who have listened this far into this podcast are music nerds like we are and really, really passionate about music and care about the people making it. I mean, if you are in that category like we are, it's, you know, it doesn't go unnoticed. Like, artists really do care if you're wearing their t-shirt or not.
Oh, yeah.
they think that's cool. They love all that, because that's how they... That's the main way they keep the lights on these days. And these days, even more so than in the past, because now nobody's touring.
Right.
So
very true. Yeah. If ever there was a time to buy merch, now is the time.
Yes. Go support your favorite artists. That's the main, I guess that's the most important part of this entire episode, is figure out a way to do it if you can.
All right. That's a perfect way to wrap it up. So thanks for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamperpedals.com. And I'll personally get your email. To email Blake, simply email info@tonemob.com. Make sure to say, hey, Blake, when's that new podcast coming out that you're talking about? If you like this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends, bandmates, others into guitar gear podcasts, or even those that aren't into guitar gear podcasts. It's just people that like podcasts. You know what? Just go in your address book, in your email, whether you're using Outlook or whatever, and send it to everyone, just everyone, regardless. Actually, don't do that. Anyways, really appreciate everyone listening. We'll talk to you next week.